other useful meditation practices. You said in your Ask a Monk series, for people caught up in lust, it is good for them to contemplate the unpleasant aspects of the body. What is the proper way to do that? I did mention this, and I think I mentioned as well that for people caught up in anger, it is good to practice friendliness, metta. Both belong to a set of four meditations called the Chaturarakha Kamadhana. Arakha means guard, so these four meditations are meant to guard the person's mind, or they are something that protects you during the time that you are practicing Vipassana meditation to see clearly. They are a sort of protection that will help keep the mind in a condition where it is able to see clearly, stopping it from falling into great states of lust, anger, and so on. The four Kamadhana meditations are mindfulness of the Buddha, mindfulness of the absence of beauty in the body, friendliness, and death. Each has different qualities, and although none of them are necessary to attain enlightenment, they can be of practical value and so are recommended as generally supportive meditation practices as a complement to the practice of Vipassana meditation. Mindfulness of the Buddha is most practical for Buddhists, people who consider the Buddha and his teachings as their guide, as a means of bolstering our courage to undertake the difficult path towards purity and enlightenment. We practice recollecting the Buddha as an example to us, someone who was the perfect teacher, free from defilement and delusion, perfect in knowledge and conduct. We reflect on the characteristics of the Buddha, for instance, that he had great wisdom. We hear his teachings and gain great faith, reaffirming in our minds that yes, indeed, he is one who had great wisdom, and so we should follow his teachings because they will certainly lead to the result he proclaims. We reflect on the great purity of the Buddha. Both he and his teachings are incredibly pure, free of dogma or superstition. The Buddha was pure in that he simply gave something to the world that was of use to all beings, as opposed to looking for students or trying to become famous. We reflect on his great compassion, deciding to teach for the whole of his enlightened life. He could have sat in the forest and meditated and passed away undisturbed, but when he was asked to teach, he gave up his own peaceful abiding to bring peace to others. There are many qualities of the Buddha that we recite and reflect upon, and although this is obviously something that is most useful for the Buddhists, I would encourage everyone to study about the qualities of the Buddha. One simple way to do this is to recite the Pali verse recollecting his virtues and consider each one individually. So we say, Vidya Charana Sampannu, which means endowed with knowledge and conduct, and reflect on the Buddha's greatness of knowledge and conduct, and so on. The second meditation is the one you asked about, mindfulness of the unpleasant or literally not beautiful nature of the body. The view that the body is something beautiful is wrong. There is nothing intrinsically beautiful about the body. It could be argued that there is nothing intrinsically ugly about the body either, but in comparison to the perception of the body as beautiful is generally due to not paying close attention to reality, whereas the perception of the body as ugly is generally a result of paying attention. If you compare the body to gold or diamonds or a flower, the human body isn't very high on any objective scale of beauty. This is made clear by the practice of reviewing the parts of the body. Starting with the hair on your head, its nature is like grass that has been planted in this skull, and if you do not wash it, smells and looks repulsive. Focusing your attention on hair as a meditation object, you quickly come to see that hair is not the attractive thing we ordinarily perceive it as. We often perceive a person's hair as beautiful, but if a strand of hair falls into our food, we might become nauseous. When hair is cut off, it looks unappealing in clumps on the floor. People who keep their hair after cutting it are often met with revulsion. We go through all the various parts of the body as a reflection. Head hair, body hair, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, blood, bones, bone marrow, feces, urine, liver, spleen, heart, and so on. Traditionally, one would learn and recite the Pali names for each. Kesa, Loma, Nakha, Danta, Tako, Mamsam, Haru, Ati, Atiminjam, etc. through all 32 parts of the body, then break them up into groups or reflect on them individually, saying Kesa, 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 and just repeat that word over and over, focusing on the concept of head hair in much the same way as we focus on experience in a Vipassana meditation. Except in this meditation, one focuses on a concept, the concept of head hair. You do not have to convince yourself that the body is loathsome. You just reflect mindfully about the parts of the body, and slowly the delusion of beauty fades as you become more familiar with the true nature of the body. In some cases, it can happen that one does become repulsed as a result of this sort of practice. So it is best practiced by one who has great lust for physical beauty to help free them of that misperception. The third meditation is friendliness, metta, which is often used as a means of dedicating the goodness gained through cultivating mindfulness to those we care for. After a formal meditation session, you can channel the strength and clarity of mind gained from meditation to express appreciation for all beings and to commit yourself to overcoming any conflict you might have with others. This practice can be of great benefit to the practice of Vipassana meditation, helping to straighten out the crookedness we have in our minds. There are many ways to practice metta. You can extend goodwill consecutively in terms of proximity, wishing first for your parents to be happy, then for relatives, family, people nearby, people in your city, country, the whole world, and finally, the whole universe. Even a few minutes of this practice after finishing with Vipassana meditation is useful for overcoming anger, strengthening relationships with others, and straightening the mind. The fourth meditation is mindfulness of death, which is useful for cultivating a sense of urgency, reminding us that we cannot just go on with our lives as though there were no tomorrow. Eventually, there comes a day of reckoning when our physical body dies. At the time of one's death, they say, your whole life flashes before your eyes and you will cling to whatever has the strongest emotional hold on your mind, leading you to be born again based on that experience. If it is a bad experience, your next life will be unpleasant. Remembering this possibility is an important practice to stop us from being negligent. There are many ways to cultivate mindfulness of death. The traditional method is to simply say to yourself something like, life is uncertain, death is certain, or all beings have to die, and I too will have to die one day. There is a story of the Bodhisattva teaching his whole family mindfulness of death. So they were never complacent, and when his son died, no one in the family was consumed by suffering at the loss. You can and should make use of all these meditations from time to time as appropriate. They are all beneficial and can be used together with Vipassana meditation to great benefit.